The big coffee companies, they make coffee in two ways, instant or they roast beans, which are then ground and sold. Those two things are like $250 billion a year. They will not change any of those things because those are cash cows, massive cash cows.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. If you enjoy listening to our show, make sure to follow the podcast and leave a rating. And now, here's your host, Sylvain.
Philip, Alex, a very well welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. It's a pleasure to have both of you as a guest today.
Thank you. How are you?
All good. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation. Let me first properly introduce you real quick. Philip, you are the CEO and adventurous sales guy. Alex, you are the CMO and branding genius of No Normal Coffee, the world's first coffee from the tube. I already see in your faces, we have plenty of stuff to talk about. Let me start with the first question, very obvious one. How did the two of you actually meet?
Now you're taking me back a few years. So Alex and I know each other for more than 20 years. I'm 37 now, so teenage years. I think where we met was we were both members of the same water ski and wakeboard club in Zurich. And I think when I was about 16 or 17, we first started going wakeboarding together. And then I think, you know, at that age in the summer holidays, every hour you try to spend doing the things you love. So we were on the lake almost every day of every vacation. And then from the lake onto the land, we started to become very good friends. And now 20 years later, we are, I would say, best friends. And Alexander is the godfather of one of my sons and I'm the godfather of his sons. So we are very much connected in our lives.
Amazing. So you have a through and through long-term history. However, to then actually start a company together, isn't that also a bit of a risk? You know, of course, you know each other. Of course, friendship is there for many, many years. But at the same time, you go all in to now also start a company together.
Absolutely. Maybe I can add something there. I think it's been a super interesting challenge. I mean, obviously, knowing Philip since such a long time, we have a very friendship level relationship and now moving into business. Of course, there's some challenges from here and there, and you have to start interacting with each other on a different level. But I think we've done that really, really well, and we're super direct with each other when something's not right and get things solved right off the bat. So I think that's been a really positive experience, and I think it's also brought us closer together as friends. I mean, I hear I'm on the phone with Philip more than with my wife, so I think that means a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I want to add here as well that Alex and I are both pretty competitive athletes. Now that we're parents, a little bit less, but before we were both probably the most competitive out of all of our friends. So when it came to sort of this, we've done most of this already in our sort of sports life. So we know exactly how we get when we are at the limit. So it's nice to get to know each other on this level as well when it comes to business. But yeah, all love.
The perfect prerequisites to start a company together, I would say. So what actually motivated you to start No Normal Coffee? Because you probably have some personal relation to the problem or something that you wanted to see changed in the world that kicked things off. Please take us back to that story.
Well, I'll start here. I think Alex will add a few points. But for me, a lot of times, you know, in kind of your life, you see things, and you obviously now over the last 15, 20 years, we've seen companies that have started or were started by people that were a lot younger than we are now or have had much less experience than we have now. And we both actually feel like we arrived at a moment where our sort of experience thus far, combined with our talents and our sort of understanding of startups and business, came together, sort of everything sort of converged. And because we both also have an entrepreneurial heart, and again, we've tried things before, we also tried food things before, more like, you know, very early stage, but we just tried a lot of things together. But with this idea, what was interesting when we exchanged about the idea Alex was so surprised that no one was doing this anywhere. And this was kind of the get-go, the genesis of our mission, was when we said, look, we have all this experience, we have all this network, and we've seen so many people do incredible things where we learned a lot from. So maybe with this product that nobody else is doing in a market that is this big, maybe the stars actually are aligned for us to give this our best shot. But maybe, Alex, maybe you want to add a little bit more here also from like our outdoors lives.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were always very, very open-eyed when it comes to problems which are, haven't been solved yet. So we always had to watch out for that. And I think that's the one of the first super important ingredients to actually find a good idea, is to actually have your eyes open for problems which are not solved, and especially problems which you face yourself. And I think Philip and I, as mentioned, we whenever we have time, we go to the outdoors, we go ski touring, we go hiking, we go climbing, whatever. And it's always an adventure, but that coffee aspect has always been a part of it. So it's always been kind of our savior moment between these adventures, where we said like, oh, where we always like thought about, okay, during this hike, where are we going to drink our coffee? You know, where is that perfect spot to drink that coffee? And we always had to decide between, okay, like, do we take all the gear with us, like the grinders and the mocha and all that, and actually have a good coffee? Or do we want to go lightweight and we really have to like go with a solution such as like an instant powder, which then when it comes to taste just doesn't deliver what you want? So, and then at some night we're just brainstorming a bit about that problem, and Phil just dropped in coffee de tube, which is basically coffee in a tube in Swiss German, and it kind of started sparking in our heads, you know. And like Philip said, we've both built products for customers, you know, in the past, so we know what it takes to build a successful product. And then when you finally have an idea which solves a problem you want to get solved, but also solves a problem where you think others will have the same problem, then like it just starts sparkling, you know, and you just want to get going the same day. And I think that's also what we did. I mean, when do we start? We started last summer, June last summer, and you know, here we are with a ready to launch product. So I think that's also quite an impressive timeline, and that kind of shows that we were kind of ready to go right from the start.
So you basically are the challenger in the global coffee market, so to speak. And yet I wonder, why has none of the big players like Nestle, for example, done that before? Coffee from the tube. It sounds revolutionary, but at the same time also simple. So I wonder, why did none of the big players do that before?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because obviously we've been doing our research, you know, we've basically just been waiting for the day where we see somebody already doing it, because like you said, it does seem kind of obvious. And there has been one, actually even Nestle, which did it about 10 years ago. They did a version of it, which was called coffee and milk. So it was a very...
Coffee and cream, sorry.
Very only focused. I think they did a test run in New Zealand and Australia. However, it was discontinued within a short period of time. And we came across of it on a Facebook page where like hundreds of people were writing on like the Australian Nestle Facebook page, like, guys, why did you stop doing this product? It was the perfect camping companion. You know, we absolutely loved it. Bring it back, bring it back. And that's also for us was such a nice, first target group to connect with, you know, and say, guys, we're actually working on a successor of this in a much better way. But yeah, apart from that, there's really nothing. So,
yeah, if I may add here as well, we have to kind of separate the big corporations that control the global coffee trade and the sort of innovation startups that happen on the side. And the big coffee companies, they focused literally, if you go through every single one of them, they make coffee in two ways. They either make instant, so freeze-dried or spray-dried coffee that you can dissolve in water, or they roast beans, which are then ground and sold. So you extract the coffee through a water system, like a machine, or you dissolve it. Those two things are like $250 billion a year, $300 billion. That just those two things. And to us, that just seems crazy. So it also puts into perspective the business opportunity for one of the big guys to actually go behind a new coffee. You know, let's take Nestle again, right? Nestle has Nescafe and Nespresso. They will not change any of those things because those are cash cows, massive cash cows. So if they now add a new coffee product, it would probably cannibalize one of these two, which is not good for shareholder value. What they're more looking to do is find new emerging coffee innovation startups like Blue Bottle Coffee in the US, for example, which was acquired by Nestle, and then ride out these and somehow integrate them into the mother business. But across the board, nobody has been doing it simply because it was the niche for a big guy is too small. And for a small guy to go into a perceived niche of this size was maybe a missed opportunity. But for us, it was actually the perfect point because we define the outdoor not only as the adventure, sort of Everest hiker guy. Outdoor for us means the moment you leave your house, you are outdoors. So maybe you want to have a tube in your handbag. Maybe you want to have a tube in your backpack. Maybe you want to have a tube when you go skiing. So outdoor for us is a different definition than it is for most kind of in that marketing world.
I see. That's super interesting. And this brings me to the next question about the timing. I think you very well explained why it makes sense to be the challenger in this market. Yet another question is the question about timing. Why is the timing right for you in this very moment to be working on this?
I mean, it also, sorry if I jump in again here, but I think based on what we said earlier about our own kind of personal backgrounds and experience where we feel like, you know, we are at a point of our life where we have enough energy to try it. but at the same time, we also have enough energy to convince ourselves and others that we are ready to do it. So I think that's a nice X convergence. The coffee space, as well as sort of the outdoor snack space, has gone a bit stale. Big coffee companies, they only acquire growth. They don't necessarily develop growth or portfolios. And if you look a little bit deeper into the innovation space, there are many small pockets of players doing something, but they're all doing sort of instant coffee, but high quality instant coffee or coffee concentrates. Alex can speak to that a little bit more. Or there's a like the most funded coffee startup in the world, which is called Committeer. They're in the US. And they basically freeze coffee and they ship it to you on dry ice. So you can then just pour hot water over it and you have a delicious cup of coffee. And one cup of coffee costs you about nine US dollars or 10. And it, to me, it's ridiculous. And we came up with this idea and the coffee is more sustainable than most. It is easier to prepare than most. And it is of much higher quality than most. So it just feels a bit, maybe this is my entrepreneurial naivety at this moment, but I feel like we have quite a good opportunity for us to kind of exploit.
Yeah, maybe I can add some points there when it comes to a coffee concentrate. So that's something I was kind of digging into before we had the idea for No Normal was there's a few startups in the sector which are focusing on coffee concentrate, which kind of comes in a glass, which you just like add a few spoons to water and then you also have your coffee. But they're very focused very strongly on like these coffee drinks, like latte with like all kinds of fancy stuff on it. But I was trying it and I thought like, wow, okay, this is actually pretty good, really interesting, but I still can't take it on our outdoor trips because you need to refrigerate it. It comes in a glass, you know, it's just not made for that use case. So, but it shows that people are ready for it because they're super successful, you know, in their space. So that also kind of gave me some confidence to know that people are ready for alternatives, you know, and I think ours is now really scoped for that market in the outdoors. And therefore, I'm really confident that it can work.
And ours is the first that you can eat or drink. Or drink or eat, I guess. You know, we always go for the drink, but you can also eat our coffee, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you can also use it to make delicious desserts and other stuff, right? So it's very versatile in terms of its application.
Absolutely. It's the Swiss Army knife of coffee.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. You also mentioned before your previous experience. Now, you said you're not the youngest entrepreneurs, but still very energetic to get things off the ground. So your experience that you bring to the table is probably another key factor to make this happen right now. Can you tell us a bit more about your past experiences and projects you've worked on that really help you now to lift no normal coffee off the ground?
I have a bit of a, I guess for a very regular Swiss guy, a bit of a different background. So I studied law and business administration as a Swiss German in the French part of Switzerland. So I'm bilingual by nature. But then after graduating, I thought, do I really want to go into a Swiss corporate insurance or whatever and be, you know, there already? So my life actually took me somewhere else. I moved to Africa, to East Africa in early 2012 and worked for 3 years in a very, very big advertising agency where I was looking after telecommunications and banking clients. Which obviously sounds maybe a bit like, oh, okay, so you went to Africa to be a banking advertising guy, but what we could do every weekend was go into the bush, go on safaris, go and explore different beaches, travel, and just really live a life that was very full of adventure. And one thing you also learn early when you get to sort of the emerging markets is people trust you with quite big tasks already very early. So I was maybe, 25 at the time, and I was immediately given a team of, you know, up to 12 people in different markets to kind of manage and back and forth with communications in different languages, and all very kind of results and performance driven. So you learn very early the practical side of work, which probably back home I would have had to wait a lot longer for to obtain. And then I moved over to West Africa and lived in Nigeria for quite a few years and worked in entrepreneurship programs. I worked for Ringier, developing their digital brands in Africa. So for those Swiss people that don't know, Ringier is actually quite big in Africa in e-commerce, content and classifieds. And then also got some experience working in entrepreneurship for a sort of well-known Silicon Valley founder who had a program in Africa to help young African entrepreneurs kind of become entrepreneurs themselves and build startups and fund them and incubate them and so on. And ever since I got back to Switzerland, I've been working still in the sort of innovation space, essentially like pan-European scale-ups in sales, business development and partnerships. So that's kind of my track record. And the energy behind it comes more from my nature rather than my nurture. I've always been an energetic person and I've done a lot of endurance races, you know, ultra marathons and sort of Ironman competitions. So I'm always one for challenge and kind of depleting the batteries to recharge them. That's sort of me.
Amazing. What about you, Alex?
Well, also kind of a mixed background. I originally also started kind of the classical path. I started in business, actually in food import and export. But also then very on realized that that's not going to be my future. So I then moved into the design space, did an industrial design bachelor here in Zurich at the ZHDK. And from there on, actually during my studies already started working as a freelance designer, started kind of building a smaller client base. Did that for a few years after my studies and then kind of moved into the corporate world of design. So I was working for a few years there for Sennheiser in their design management team. And there started in product design, but then very quickly took over the global brand space design area of the company. So we were building stores, trade shows, shop and shop systems, etc. And then from there, I also kind of moved together with the entire design management team into an agency setup where we kind of built up agencies from scratch, which is now around 25 people, where we were obviously still doing product design, UX design, brand strategy, etc. And there I was kind of managing all accounts on that side. And during that time, I also did my master's. So that was marketing management in Basel, which kind of really helped kind of round up my skill set, which I'm now obviously using to the fullest in this new setup.
Thank God, because I am useless there. I'm so useless. I'm so glad Alex is such a pro, honestly.
Not such a hardcore Ironman guy as Philip, but also very often outdoors and doing stupid things. But I try.
And please also take us to some of the recent milestones that you have achieved together as a team with the launch and preparation of No Normal Coffee.
It's actually very interesting that we're doing this this collaboration now, because while we are speaking, one of the milestones that we're on is we are doing a pre-sale campaign right now on a platform called Crowdify. And we launched it last week, Thursday, and we're already almost 30% of our goal. So we have over 15,000 francs of pre-orders from less than 6 days, and they come from more than 10 countries, which is wow. It's quite cool. Yeah, it's the product and the campaign is really reaching a lot of people in different places. We have secured, which is great for us, we've secured a bit north of 100,000 Swiss francs from angel investors in Switzerland and the US that are also very industry savvy, that come from the snack, food and beverage industries as well. Then big ones also is for us, we have already retailer and distributors in Switzerland and abroad who have committed to ordering from us. One thing that is more of a sort of a soft milestone, I guess, you know, but we have a lot of traffic from the US and Canada on our website and across our social. We've had a lot of requests from, you know, influencers in the hiking, camping, van life space, with each has 50,000, 100,000 followers, that they really look forward to trying our product and that they want to get their hands on it and where, when and how. And so it's just, again, all these points, they kind of do exactly what we wanted them to do with Crowdify and with our social. It's just, we want validation that people want our product. And we've bootstrapped everything so far. We've really done the most we can with as little as we have. So to get already these results for us is just amazing. You know, the more we can kind of inject into this, into the marketing as well as the product, if the traction continues like this, I mean, it's really, I don't want to say the sky's the limit because it's a cheesy line, but I've seen many startups and I've been involved in many entrepreneurial projects, and I haven't come across traction like this from, you know, we haven't shipped a single product yet. You know, we've just talked about the product.
I love this. This is perfect and also shows that people really want to buy the product to a certain degree. We also love to talk about challenges here on the podcast. And when we talked about that in the preparation, you know, one could think production, brand building or distribution, sales are all very big challenges to solve on its own. But for you, they just seem to fall into places quite naturally. So do you even have any challenges that you see in front of you that you need to overcome right now?
Like you said, like a lot of things have worked out surprisingly nice. I think we were both prepared for a grind to make this happen. But like Philip said, like we got a lot of traction. We got a lot of positive feedback based on our first activations. And, you know, we weren't sure. You know, I mean, it's a coffee in a tube. It's not the most, you know, obvious product. It could have been that people would just wouldn't understand it and just wouldn't be interested. But so that's a major, major positive side, which we thought is going to be a challenge, which isn't, or which hasn't been. Obviously, the development of the recipe of the product is, it's been a challenge. It's been tricky for sure. Just because
when we couldn't control it.
Yeah, we couldn't control it. With all of the stuff, we were sitting in front of our computers, you know, doing the stuff. And there we were kind of waiting for our partners to come up with something that we imagined. And then also, when is it done? You know, like they show you a prototype and then you have to kind of decide, okay, is this the one or do we tweak something else? So I think that was also something where Philip and I were a bit concerned. Like, how should we decide when we have the final product? So I think what really helped us out there, again, which we do in many, many of our areas, is to bring in experts. So obviously, Philip and I, we don't have like a professional coffee roasting background. We love coffee, but like to decide that this is the one, we really thought like, okay, let's bring in some experts. So at our final recipe tasting, we brought in like coffee roasters and coffee experts, and we had like a big table of samples, and everybody tried, and it was really, really such an amazing moment because everybody pointed to the same recipe. So like everybody was like, "Hey guys, that's the one." So we just walked out of there. We're just like, "Oh my god, that's the one!" And we were so, so happy. And that was a great moment, a great challenge, but again, also a very satisfactional result came out of that.
Just to give you a little bit an idea of how big of a challenge this was for us mentally, we were spending the winter holidays together in the mountains, and we tried the previous prototype, and we were both just not entirely sure that this was it. And so while we were in the mountains, we went to Coop. We got different kinds of coffee beans. We had them ground down to a very, very fine level. We added ingredients and we started mixing again in our kitchen and sort of just, okay, let's reimagine, let's rethink this. And based off what we did in the kitchen there with a little notebook, we contacted our producers and said, "Hey, we have an idea. It might just work. Can you give it a try?" And it did work, and they tried, and so now we have the first recipe, which was the 12th iteration that we have now. It's going into production for our first product, which is the 100% Arabica dark roast sweet coffee from No Normal.
Amazing. I can't wait to taste it myself. I'm really excited now after
it's hearing really
you
delicious.
Speak about it.
Exactly. It's really delicious, I have to say.
So now to really, you know, bring the company to the launch and to the next level, you're also running not only the Crowdify pre-sale campaign, but also fundraising. So can you tell us a bit more about how much money that you're looking for in total and what the funds are planned to be used for?
We are currently raising via convertible loan agreement, which means we can raise up to 500,000 Swiss francs, which is also sort of our goal for this round. One of the reasons why we are doing a convertible is because it is almost impossible at this point in time to attribute the value to the company. Even seasoned investors are saying, you know, as whatever an investor is willing to pay, that's the value. And we're saying, okay, let's get some traction under our belt. Let's do this for 12, 18 months, see how far we get. And then we do an evaluation, a proper one. And all of our sort of the people that trusted us from the beginning, they can now come in under the CLA with a 10% discount conversion in 18 months on September 1st, 2025. And what we are using the money for, it's, you know, we are developing a product in a space that is crowded. So a lot of the money will go towards the product itself and then the marketing and distribution of the product. We are doing a big launch in Munich in June at the Outdoor Expo. That's where we're going to be meeting a lot of distributors, a lot of retailers, a lot of outdoorsy sort of people. So that is going to cost money. Then all the campaigns. We have, like I said, more than 10 countries have ordered already from us. So we are going to launch campaigns in all these markets and try to get B2B contacts in all these markets as well. So to get us off the ground to a level where we are comfortable, the minimum is 500K. But we cannot go above 500K because we don't want to do an equity round. So that kind of is the challenge in and of itself. Just to this point, we have paid for everything ourselves so far. All the development, the brand, the websites, the legal, that's all come out of our pocket. And we have already a few investors on board that believe in us and that have seen that this is something that can work. So we have a bit, like I said, a bit more than 100,000 Swiss francs committed already from some angels. And now obviously we're hoping to raise a little bit more with Swisspreneur.
And exactly, that's why we're teaming up and why we basically push you as a syndicate case. So for everyone who's interested in seeing your pitch deck, the investment memo that you put together, they can sign up for the Deal Flow newsletter on our syndicate website at swisspreneur.org. And just a full disclaimer, this is of course only for information purposes and doesn't conduct any investment advice from our side. So guys, to wrap up the episode today, I also want to ask you some rapid fire questions. I'm going to start with you, Alex. What was your summer job as a teenager?
Oh my God, there were so many. I always used my summer holidays to earn some money, to earn some pocket money. And it went from like delivering pizza for Domino's. I was very often, for some reason, the handyman within my neighborhood. So people would bring me their bikes and I would kind of go and help them build a terrace in their garden and all kinds of stuff. So I was already pretty crafty when I was a teenager. But then also, you know, I already started working in restaurants. And my most famous hustle was I used to go with my mom to shop. And then I would buy like these ready-to-cook brownie, mixtures. And I would just make brownies and just sell them in my entire neighborhood for like a horrendous price. So that was my normal hustle during my vacation.
Amazing. What was it for you, Philip?
I started my first sort of pocket money that I earned outside of the chores at home. I grew up in the countryside a little bit and outside of Zurich. So I cleaned out a lot of farms. And if you know cows, you know the kind of dirt they make. So that was my job, cleaning out that from the cows at the farms. And then as a teenager, I also restaurants, waiting tables, kitchens. For one full week once, I was peeling vegetables in the kitchen 12 hours a day. So yeah, that was good. But also one cool thing we did that was more sort of on the gambling entrepreneurial side was we would, in the mountains where we would usually go in the summer, there was a golf course. And my brother and I would sit somewhere and watch golfers play, and we would kind of map where the shot would go when they missed the shot. And then in the evening we would go collect all the balls that we would then sell tomorrow again back to the golfers. And that's how we would make some summer money. And it was always nice because, you know, you would lift the rock, and then under the rock in the stream it would be like a golf ball, and it's like a casino slot machine, like cling cling cling, and it would come out. So many hustles since very, very small, very, very young. Yeah.
Nice. I have one question for each of you to wrap up. First one for Alex, what are you most proud of in your life?
Well, I mean, I think the most obvious one is obviously my family. Like Philip mentioned at the very beginning, I have a 11-month-old son, which has been the biggest gift, but also the biggest challenge at the same time. But also together with my wife, obviously the biggest pride of my life. But then also when it comes to maybe the more business related topics, I think in the context of No Normal, it's been such an amazing experience to have this idea, but also then have the experience and the know-how to execute on it. Like, you know, I've built brands before, I've built products before, I know how to develop a brand strategy, you know, all that kind of stuff. I can just like, I'm sitting here and I'm ready to go, and I see it come alive. And I also see people appreciating it, you know, like so many people we've talked to have been like, oh man, we really like the idea, but also the brand, man, the brand's really nice, you know, and we really like it. We really identify with it. So that's just been a super, super nice experience that I'm super proud of.
Amazing. And the last question for you, Philip, what is a surprising fact that people don't know about you?
Let's see. I think In the context of where we live today, or where I live again after having lived outside of Switzerland, especially in Africa for a very long time, where there's not so much a barrier between people. You know, it's if you see someone and you want something, you tell them in their face right away and you don't stop until you get it. I've always been a bit of a pushy person, but obviously my almost 9 years in Africa have kind of developed that sense even more. So if there is something that I want from someone that I know has it, I will call them until the phone explodes. Some people are a little bit surprised by that, but then once the phone explodes, I'll buy a new phone and call again. I'm very relentless in the pursuit of my of the things that I want. Yeah, I mean, I've been in sales almost all my life and relationship management and stuff. So, you know, you need answers, and so I don't stop until I have them.
I guess that's why we called you the adventurous sales guy in the intro, right?
And I'm so happy to be on this side of the island, and not the one on the other phone, because
absolutely
really impressive how Philip can pull through if he really wants something.
Cool. Hey, Alex, Philip, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're really excited to see your syndicate case going live. Lots of success, all the best, and see you here for the next episode, I assume.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Silvan.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.